This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
1 point closer to the promised land. But should last night have been three? One hell of a game. So much to discuss tonight on Brilliant. Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast covering Ipswich Town up or down since 2015. My name is Mikey Pensey-Smith. This is the flagship show reflecting on Hull City away. And joining me for this one, safely back down south after their trip to Humberside, are Craig Finbow and Joe Fares. Craig, how are you feeling at the full-time whistle last night, and have your emotions changed in the 18 hours or so since?
Good evening, Mikey. First, yeah, absolutely exhausted was, I think, the first emotion following that. It was just a fantastic match to watch and to sort of be a part of partially. I don't think emotions have changed at all. It was, I think, the journey being what it is, you have enough time to sort of think about it and digest it for 3 and a bit hours, 4 hours on the way home. Once I got a couple of hours sleep and woke up again, seeing the response, I haven't really been on social media today, but in the ground, it was pretty positive. Coming out the ground, it was positive. People were sort of, it was a mixture of, Jesus, that was one hell of a game we've just witnessed. And also, yeah, it's a point. And both teams probably thought that result could have gone either way for either team, really, justifiably.
And Joe, a difficult journey home for you, Joe, but I'm sure that you were seeing the positives as you made your way through the rain-soaked motorways.
Yeah, no, it was very, very wet on the way back, wasn't it? But it was nice to get home and get through the door. After that, I think, looking at the sat-nav, the minutes were going as slowly as they were in the second half when we were a lead at certain points of the journey. But no, I sort of much the same as Craig. I sort of 5 points from three sounded very doable. And sort of, I know it's obvious and basic maths and everyone can do it, but had we lost that game last night, which could easily have happened because Hull were a very good side, 5 points from two a hell of a lot harder than 4 points from three, isn't it? We're now in a position where we know exactly what we need to do: win at home, draw away, keep that up, play like we did last night. And it was just really, really positive. And like I say, I had a thing for my son today, and I went down there, and everyone I met, saw a couple of people I'd seen at the game, and everyone was like, "What a brilliant game! Yeah, we're in such a good position. Let's go to Coventry." And you could hear conversations around you because it's all anyone in Suffolk is talking about at the moment is Ipswich Town. So wherever you go, you hear conversations about the football club, and everyone was so positive after that game last night, which, considering, if you sort of play devil's advocate, we let the lead slip three times. We were in such a strong position and didn't get there. It's brilliant that everybody's come away from that game feeling so positive. And I think, including that, like at the end of the game, the sort of players came over and they looked a little bit dejected. Then a sort of big sort of chant of sort of "we are going up" sort of slowly started building, and by the end the whole crowd was singing it. You could see some of the players, coach and stuff, I think especially Lee Grant, was really like sort of really, I don't know, it seemed to lift the players and the club that everyone's still on the same page, everyone is working together, and everyone's going to get this promotion together.
Yeah, absolutely. It was good vibes only last night, and it's going to be good vibes only tonight on this Blue Monday podcast. Obviously, this is live at the moment on YouTube, so thank you to everyone that's joined us in the chat. If you get questions in later on, I'll get to them after we've talked about the whole match itself. But yeah, thanks for joining us live, and for those of you listening after the fact, we really appreciate all of you as well. This is such an exciting time to be an Ipswich Town supporter. Now, it's impossible to talk about yesterday's game without adding the context of what happened in the Leeds game on Friday night, Craig. An absolutely bonkers game at Loftus Road. And in many ways, that was the bigger game for us this weekend than the one at Hull in many respects.
Yeah, and the most unexpected in terms of results. You know, I don't think anybody unless they're a goddamn liar, would have suggested anything like it being the result it happened to be. There was a few thinking, well, it might be a draw. Joe was obviously going for a QPR win, but to win at that ease, really, at a canter at the end, from what I saw, the second half highlights I watched, I was out Friday but caught up at the end, just seemed that Leeds were just, they were just gone, as were the vast, vast majority of the Leeds fans by the end of the match. There was no bugger there to shout abuse at the Leeds players, let alone clap them off. And you've just got to hope that it may not actually end up needing to matter, hopefully, fingers crossed. But just in terms of how that affects them going forward into next weekend and then into the playoffs when they'll be facing either West Brom or Norwich, it'll just be interesting to see because, yeah, that just came like a bolt of the blue out of nowhere, really. To me, anyway, not to Joe.
Yeah, and Rich has just joining us in the chat tonight, and he said, fair play to Jack representing the Telegram group in the pre-match predictions who went for a QPR win. I think that is called predicting with your heart, isn't it, Joe?
Yes, I actually thought QPR would get something, but also that we'd drop points at Hull last night. And I think the way it went with Leeds getting so roundly hammered and us coming away with what is a very good point when you look at the form Hull are in, the atmosphere in the ground, the fact that they're still playing for their season effectively. We've definitely got the better, even though we've both dropped points, we've definitely got the better of the results this weekend.
Absolutely, yeah. And let's get into that game against Hull. And we'll start with some pretty exciting team news. I think not many people saw this coming, not many people at all. You have to be really in the know to know these sorts of things. That is the Ipswich Town lineup, and George Hurst jumps out straight away, did his hamstring on Boxing Day, and here he is, what was it, 4 months, that my maths isn't great, as I showed earlier when I said it's 18 hours after the game finished, Craig, but yeah, is it 4 months after we last saw him in an Ipswich Town shirt, there he is leading the line. One or two of us, the first time we looked at the team sheet, missed Wes Burns, but Joe, did you think that this was, well, it was obviously a brave decision, but were you confident that they'd both be able to just step in and play well?
I was confident that they'd be up to speed once I'd seen that they were selected, because we very seldom seem to have rushed people back and put them in a position where they aren't ready. And the sports science has obviously worked incredibly hard. I know that there was a behind closed doors friendly last week, but it's still hard to judge going from, you can do as much running as you want, but when you actually get into the sort of bones of a game, actually how you're going to cope with it. And I think everyone can safely say that George Hurst coped well with the game last night. Sort of the 60 minutes he had on the pitch, he didn't look like he'd missed a game, let alone missed 4 months, did he? I thought I almost go as far as that as almost one of his best performances in an Ipswich Town shirt.
Yeah, he was fantastic, wasn't he? And Wes Burns as well, Craig, just obviously that means Amari Hutchinson has to go over onto the left-hand side. But I find that when Wes Burns is over on the right, we get so much more out of Leif Davis up the left.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Certainly in terms of what the last half hour showed once Wes Burns trotted off and Amari Hutchinson drifted over to the other side. But as sort of Joe said, neither of them showed any ill effects of the injuries that they've been suffering, did they? Considering certainly Wes Burns from a man like myself doesn't really know explosive pace, but you know, you'd think that there'd be an element of maybe doubt that first proper sprint you go for, there's always a fear in the back of your head that something's going to go twang. But fair play to them and to the medical staff. They both look absolutely on it. And as Joe says, in terms of Hurst, it looked like he was in the midst of a good run of games. It looked like he was just basically being dropped in from, you know, October, November time, when he was on a decent run, in good form, etc. He just looked straight back on it in terms of his dynamism. I know obviously we've been used to seeing Kiefer Moore play up front. No disrespect to Kiefer Moore, he does what he does, but just in terms of their physical attributes from a athleticism perspective, and I say that just that dynamism he showed up front, being able to dart from centre half to centre half, just sprint across the pitch, just to, when the ball's played into him, just to push his defender off and get into the space to take the ball, and that it just gave us just an extra yard or two up front in terms of pace off the blocks, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and also I know Cameron Bird just curled a really nice ball in his direction. I thought I've really missed seeing that pass out there. Obviously, most of the time, if Burgess isn't playing a square pass to Wolford, and he's spinning one out to Leif Davis, and that's a pass that's really important for us. But yeah, we've kind of missed that one, zipping it up into the feet of Hurst. I think Kiefer Moore is just such a fantastic back to goal centre forward, but Hurst can just cover slightly more ground up there, and he can move slightly quicker and just react to slightly different shape passes, can't he? But yeah, just I think with George Hurst in the team, we're just so much more dangerous, aren't we, Joe?
Yeah, I think it shows that the type of player is more important than the quality of player sometimes, because I don't think anybody could sit here and argue that Kiefer Moore's not a better player than George Hurst when you look at his career that he's had and what he can do. But when you look at the actual, what McKenna wants from the striker, and it is the guy that can run in behind, the guy that can hold the ball up, the guy that can occupy both centre-halves and cover the whole width of the pitch, and it's very like Ali Alhamidi seems very much more in that mould of striker as George Hurst is, just with that sort of real sheer athleticism as well as the hold-up playing. I thought Kiefer Moore's been excellent for us. He struggled in the last few weeks with, he hasn't looked that fit, but he's still been a really, really good player for us. It's been a really good signing. But I guess, as it turned out, we couldn't find a player of George Hurst's style and ability, of a high enough ability level and style to come in January, which is probably why we pushed so hard for Sam Gallagher, because he's probably more like that. So we just had to go for a real high quality player in Kiefer Moore to get into the side, as opposed to going like for like. And I think you see, like when Wes Burns has been out, sometimes you've played Amari Hutchinson on the right, and it hasn't sort of worked as well for the team as maybe having Caden Jackson out there. And whilst obviously everyone can see Amari Hutchinson's better player than Caden Jackson, it also shows that the actual roles are so important, and the style of player there. So yeah, it's really good, and sort of I was amazed at how well he played. And the sort of first 5-10 minutes of the game, you saw it's like, oh, this is what we've been missing, just this mobility all across the pitch, dragging defenders out, sort of going up against them, turning them, spinning them, having the pace to keep away from them. No, it's really, really impressive, and shows what a brilliant signing he's been for. Like I say, when you look at some of the money that's been spent in the league, for $1.5 million we picked up George Hurst for in the summer, and sort of an incredible piece of business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everyone in the chat is concurring here as well. But we weren't the only show in town yesterday, Craig. I don't know how much time you spent in Hull City Centre yesterday, but you could tell the excitement was definitely building with results elsewhere kind of going their way and giving them the opportunity to really put the pressure on the top six, wasn't there yesterday?
Yeah, that's right. It's sort of, you thought, well, it just needs... We were on the way up, me and Oscar do our predictions and stuff, and we're thinking, well, yeah, if Norwich win their game, it sort of just takes the heat out of our game a little bit. It just puts a bit of space in terms of goal difference and points behind, in front of Hull. And lo and behold, West Brom are the ones that balls things up and fall into sixth, and were then the catchable team from Hull's perspective. And as you said earlier about the atmosphere in the ground, and from both sets of fans, you know, let's not be silly, our fans were absolutely fantastic for the entire match. But so were Hull's, and neither set of fans at any point gave up on their team, I don't think. And that just sort of added to the whole atmosphere around the game and around the ground.
It was an occasion, wasn't it? It really felt like an occasion.
Yeah, and obviously it was their last home game of the season as well, wasn't it? So that obviously adds a little bit to it as well.
Yeah, let's talk about that whole team. It's Allsop in goal and a back four of Slater, Jones, Greaves and Jacob. And then it's Seri and Mawson in defensive midfield. Who is the number 50? Was it Omai?
Arkan Omer or something, wasn't it? He was good though. Omer, I liked.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, Billie Jean, much talked about on the left, and then Carvalho in behind the centre forward there. Those letters are too small for me to read that. But a dangerous team, but without Delap from the start, who caused us problems in the Portman Road game. But yeah, not a bad start from us. Sam Morsy has a shot from distance parried away by the goalkeeper. Hurst and Burns both look physically on it, Joe. And on 19 minutes, they combine for us to open the scoring.
Yeah, it was really chaotic around there. It was so busy, so congested. And literally like 10 seconds or 5 seconds before the goal, I said to my mate, because we were talking about how congested it was, I said, yeah, but when it's congested, all it takes is one pass and it can open up the whole pitch. And then Burns sort of puts the ball in the box and a poor clearance. And it's funny because George Hurst is really on his heels as well. When you look at it back, he's really on his heels and he sees the ball there. And it's just that instant reaction, first time finish, he sweeps the ball into the bottom corner. And it's a, yeah, unsavable, really neat finish and just mad to see Wes Burns and George Hurst connect after all the time out they've had. And it's, like I say, it's happened a few times this season where whatever Kieran McKenna's done has sort of is turned to gold, bringing on a sub. In the home game, we started George Edmondson because he said he likes the shape of his passes out to the left back, and lo and behold, a goal comes from that. He's just, I know, he's almost like a savant with regards to being able to tell what's going to happen. And yeah, just another incredible decision from McKenna, which is vindicated on the pitch almost instantly.
Yeah, and we have a couple of half chances to double our lead, but there's a long ball over the top, which really causes some problems too. And Zabi brings down Tufan, but the ball falls to Philogene. And this is what Ladgy's really good at. He really closes down a one-on-one situation and he makes a really solid save. We regain our composure after that one. I think Tufan Zabi's booked, isn't he? Because he does bring down the striker, and that's all you don't really want your defenders getting booked at that time. Hull was so quick in transition, and when they decide they're going to attack, they really attack at speed, don't they?
We also have some real high quality players when you look at player for player. Like Philogene was like a £5 million signing in the summer. Carvalho is spent the first half of the season at Red Bull Leipzig. Last time he was in the Championship, he scored a hell of a lot of goals and assists for Fulham when he was like 17, 18 years old. I really like that 50, that Umer, the striker Tufan. I think he was a big signing there. Tyler Morton at the back is an England under-21 international. Seri alongside him was a big player for Fulham in the Premier League. And it's like, when you look player for player quality-wise, they've built a really, really impressive squad and played as such.
Mm. Yeah, and as I mentioned, we regained our composure after that long ball caused us some problems, but it's that chilled out entertainer, relaxed passing out from the back, which proves to be our downfall in the 40th minute. And dare I say it, kind of memories of Watford away there, Joe.
Yeah, it was. And it was, it reminded me more of the Preston away game, where it was more like bad game management for me, in that a couple of minutes beforehand, Wes Burns had to go off the pitch for some reason. I couldn't really tell why. It didn't look like he'd had some treatment.
His boot.
He'd gone off the pitch and the ref was keeping him off the pitch. So we'd split the centre-backs and then we realised, okay, we're not going to do that. So everyone moved up and went to the left-hand side expecting a long kick from Hladky. And while Burns is standing on the side of the pitch, Hladky just pings the ball out to him. Obviously, he couldn't get there. And then we put ourselves in trouble. And from that point on, he looked a little bit rattled and he played a short pass into Morsy, which he dealt with. And this was another one where it's sort of that dead straight pass into Morsy. And Morsy asks for the ball. Morsy should do a lot better with it. There's a pass onto Wolfen and he sort of has a look and doesn't see Seri. But it just wasn't the right pass. That pass wasn't there. The pass on was to Wolfenden, not to Morsy. But Morsy had to do better with it. But it was just frustrating from there. But they took the goal really well from that point, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very composed, wasn't it? The way he slipped his man in, and it was a good finish. And I think Wolfenden considered sticking an arm up there and doing a Christoph Berra, didn't he, Craig?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. You can see it from the replay. But I think you got fair play to Seri, wasn't it, that nicked it off of Morsy? Because Morsy, as the ball's coming to him, and as Morsy does, Morsy's glanced over both shoulders to check that there's nobody there. But by the time the ball's at him, Seri's just timed his run and his interception so well that he's sort of on him. And as Joe said, it's very similar to my eyes to the Preston, one of the first two Preston goals, whichever one it was. And yeah, it's just played nicely. And then Seri sort of drags Hladke out, doesn't he? Knocks it wide, and then it's just swept in, really. Good thing.
Yeah, very much so. And there was, I mean, we're going to make this comparison, hopefully, for the Coventry game as well. But that away end did feel a little bit like Barnsley last season. And that was kind of proven as people started to creep out for a half-time beer before the end of the first half. And those that did, Craig, sort of lived to regret it a little bit, didn't they? Because what happens on the stroke of half-time?
Yeah, they do. And finally, just best reminding me, actually, Mike, just before I go on to the goal, there was a guy near us who just came. It was 5 minutes before we'd scored this goal, so it was near enough half-time. He just comes strolling out of the concourse and down the steps with two pints of beer in his hand, just off to his seat. And, like, the steward just, like, looking at him, think, mate, what are you doing? He's, like, wandering down as if he'd, like, tricked the system, and these other 2,000 people around him who wouldn't have minded a beer watching the match had just, like, forgotten there was a bar downstairs. He didn't mind. He was bold as brass. Anyway, he soon got ushered back to his seat, and he actually missed this goal because there was a corner and it was cleared to Wolfenden, as Wolfenden tends to nowadays. He's the deeper defender who doesn't actually go up for the corner, but it falls to him outside the box, and he clips it wide right to Hutchinson. And on this occasion, as we were talking about earlier, Hutchinson playing on the left, as it transpires from the corner that we've taken, he's now situated at just outside the box on the right, on the other side of the pitch, near the corner of the box. He stands up Philogene. You know, you'd probably want Philogene to be the man that was marking him or closing him down at the time. Just stands him up, jinks inside onto his left, and, you know, use your verb of choice. He curls, dips, whips it into the far corner. And literally, as soon as he'd done that initial jink, Oscar next to me goes, he just said, do it. And he did it. And he slammed it straight into that top corner. And as you say about the crowd, it was just, yeah, pretty much bedlam. When that went in, people would jump, and I just textbook away, and strangers jumping on each other. It was a great thing. And just good timing as well, wasn't it? In terms of just having that lift to go into half time with it. The crowd just carried on singing during the halftime interval as well. Just on that uplift, really, from that goal. It's just a great, great goal.
And it felt like a moment, that one, didn't it, Joe?
Yeah, it felt like we reacted really well to being pulled back on terms. That we'd started, and from at 1-0, we weren't playing that well. They would sort of get back into the game, then they scored, and it felt like they had some real momentum to go with. But as soon as they scored, it felt like we just sort of turned that screw back, and we got really back on top there. And it's, yeah, great to score before half time. It's always a massive time to score, because it there, and like Craig said, the atmosphere was incredible. I went to the toilet after about 20 minutes, and the whole concourse was just rocking just from the outside. And then at half time again, the concourse,
it's a great
was just
concourse,
rocking,
isn't
there
it?
Yeah, really good,
great, yeah, concourse,
fantastic stuff. Yeah, just a really good first half performance against, as we've already said, a very good Hull City team. Probably the best first half performance we've had for quite some time, maybe since the Sheffield Wednesday game. At half time, Liam Delap comes on for Hull. I don't think he's 100% fit. That's why Liam Rossini couldn't start him in this game, but he decides, right, we've got to go for this in the second half. And I think he brings off Morton as a midfielder, and yeah, plays to lap in that centre forward position, and he needs just 10 minutes to find the net for the host. This is probably their best goal of the game, but maybe a couple of things that we regret from that goal.
Yeah, and he sort of made an instant impact, didn't he? Literally from the kickoff, they had a header from across from the left, and that was sort of set up from Delap, and then a little while later I think Hladke maybe flaps at one, and there's another header, so yeah, he'd made an instant impact. And we'll go on to the other sub that they made in terms of the goal scorer of their third goal, but Rusinha seemed to have just found the solution to football by bringing on a striker who would then score within 10 minutes of being on the pitch. And it's a similar sort of position to where we created George Hurst's goal, wasn't it? Down in that corner, same corner of the pitch. And O'Muir sort of feeds Carvalho, I think it is. Carvalho gets the run on Luongo, doesn't he? And it's a good ball, a good well-timed run, well-timed ball, and it's just whipped in first time. And I say, unfortunately, Luongo hasn't reacted in time to get back. And the cross comes in, and Burgess is sort of caught on his heels. You can sort of see him on the replay following the ball in and then sort of stops, and the ball just flashes in front of him. And unfortunately, Delap's got the run on Wolfenden and nips in front of him to sweep it in. So, you know, from Hull's perspective, it's a very, very good goal. It's just a nice, incisive move, isn't it? It's a pass, it's a cross, it's a run in front of the defender, and it's poked in. So, yeah, it's just maybe we just switched off for a little bit, but, you know, I think sometimes you just need to give a little bit of credit to the opposition. It's just you've got three half-decent players. You know, we've been singing the praises of these players currently so far, and three of them have combined to produce one touch goal, haven't they?
Yeah. And just like we did at 1-1, Joe, you've already mentioned how we regained composure, regained a foothold in the game. We immediately start to look dangerous as soon as the score's tied at 2-2. Burgess loops a header from a Davis free kick onto the crossbar from quite a long way out. That would have been a fantastic goal from him. Moore and Sarmiento then come on for the returning stars, Burns and Hurst. I think we've kind of already covered their performance, but just incredibly positive. We'll talk about this in the flagship extra when we talk about Coventry, but we'll talk about who we see being in that lineup. But I think that on the basis of that performance from both of them, I think there's a good chance they both start at Coventry. Moore is immediately involved when he comes on. He spins his man, hits a stinging left foot shot, which is turned away by Allsop. But it's not long before there are absolute limbs once again in the away end, Joe.
Yeah, from the resulting corner from Moore's shot, Davis puts the corner in and ends up coming straight back out to him. And he just rolls the ball to Amari and sort of picks up his 18th assist of the season there. Probably not one of his finest assists, but sort of puts there. And Hutchinson has a lot of space. There's some great commentary on the Sky Sports feed of the game about them not learning their lesson. I assume it's Gary Weaver doing it, but yeah. some excellent bits on there. And yeah, he just steps inside. He has a lot of time, but there's a hell of a lot of bodies, and he just hits another perfect shot. I'd say the guy sitting next to me, as he sort of lines up the shot, he just same again, and then it just sort of went across, flew into the net. And yeah, hashtag limbs, hashtag scenes in the away end there. But it was almost just laughable how good it was. I sort of just stood there almost like just laughing to myself at just how good this player is and how he's stepping up. And like I say, the next 10, 15 minutes after this were unbelievable from him as well.
It was scary, wasn't it?
It was an incredible. Like, I can't remember the last time I've seen an Ipswich player that good for such a long period of the game. He's just had them on absolute toast, his fullback, didn't he?
If you think that it was Matty Jacobs, wasn't it? He was the left back, and he probably thought, well, that's Wes Burns gone off after 62 minutes. And then Hutchinson trots over to his side of the pitch and basically, yeah, twisted him into the ground for the remaining half an hour of the game.
He was frightened, wasn't he, to put it lightly, every time.
Yeah. Just kept calling someone else over, didn't he? Every time the ball went out to Hutchinson, he was like just gesturing for someone else to come and help him.
Yeah, a fantastic moment, that one. Hutchinson beats his man again and has a right foot shot saved by Allsop. Actually, that one came after, because I mean, as we say, Hutchinson's on absolute fire, and he goes an amazing run and slips in Sarmiento as a curling shot saved by Allsop. Then Hutchinson gets through again himself and has a right foot shot saved by Allsop. Taylor and Travis then come on for Luongo and Chaplin as we look to sort of inject a little bit more energy, and bringing Travis on doesn't seem like a bad idea either. A little bit of defensive midfield now. So what did you make of that decision? We sort of moved Taylor into that number 10 role, didn't we, Joe?
Yeah, and I thought, like, Luongo, he plays well in the main, but he had to took a yellow card, didn't he? And it did seem that after he took that yellow card, within about 2 minutes of that, he just got ran past twice. And I think once he's on a booking, it just seems to really limit his play. So as soon as he's got that yellow card, he was just starting to get a bit run over in the middle. So I don't know whether that was sort of because he had the yellow, because he'd sort of run out of puff a little bit. He'd sort of covered a lot of ground in that first bit. But yeah, we needed a change in there. And I didn't think it was a game for Taylor to drop back into that role. So Travis was the obvious one there. And Taylor, for the second time in recent weeks, coming on in that 10 role and really impressing in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was so up for it, and he's also quite a big physical presence in there as well. He fights well in the air. Sarmiento's lively as well, just defending from the front, winning the ball back for us, and just so direct as well. That counterattack, I'm not sure what stage this is. It might be around 78 minutes or so, and the ball slipped through to Sarmiento. I thought that was going to be that Marcin Reus goal against Bolton to wrap up the semi-final in 2000, Craig, where it was just such a nice move, and then he gets it sits up, and he is kind of the Martin Reus of this Ipswich team, but he always hits the target, doesn't he? But yeah, he just didn't quite get that one far enough in the corner. And then there was a little bit of a weird incident down in our corner. I can't remember if it was like a Leif Davis corner, and the ball went back out to him, and he sort of slid in, and the ref made a really strange decision to give them a goal kick or something. Was it offside?
It went off for a throw, but the linesman gave a goal kick. It went off next to his foot.
Did he definitely give a goal kick and not an offside on Davis?
I don't know. It was taken from the goal kick, so it wasn't as if it was taken right down near the corner flag. It was taken
near the goal. Whatever it was bizarre. And I think that's where Davis rolls his ankle as well, because that was a really awkward one for him. So Davis eventually is replaced by Harry Clark, who comes on at left back, not his favourite position. And this is not an easy game to come in at fullback. And unfortunately, 5 minutes later, Craig, Hull find themselves a third leveller of the game.
Yeah. And it's from a pretty, well, it wasn't a nondescript free kick, really, but it's a free kick. We were starting to give away a couple of free kicks around the box. And obviously, you know, they were piling on players to just bring on more attacking players. I think that's one of the reasons, as we were talking about the subs coming on, is we're trying to work out exactly what they're doing, other than just throwing on more and more strikers. By bringing on Travis and Taylor, I suppose it just gives you just a touch more solidity through the centre of the pitch. But yeah, this free kick was wide right from Hull's perspective. And it's a long looping free kick to the back post. There's sort of plenty of time to see it coming. It's not as if it's like whipped in with any pace or put any sort of skill or, I say, whip into it. And Twenzaby, it finds itself with two men. He's marking one. There's one behind him. I think initially at the very beginning, it's Hutchinson that's nominally standing next to the guy that heads it back across. So he just gets the jump on Twenzaby and headers it towards goal. You wouldn't say it was particularly in towards any corners or at any particular pace. And Hlaki parries it strongly, but perhaps not into the place you want him to be parrying it, about 7 yards out and just about between the posts, really. And it falls to Ohio, and it's a good finish, isn't it? It's on the volley, and it's straight back past Hlaki. And you know, he'll get criticism, and he got criticism on Sky when I got home and watched the post-match stuff with Luke Chambers and Heckingbottom, I think, wasn't it? It was on there, and they were saying, as you would, the keeper's got to do better. He's got to either catch it or push it a lot further away from the goal. And yeah, he probably does have to. But then, as Joe was saying earlier, he's saved a couple. He's got one-on-ones, etc. He's got a bit of credit in the bank. But you would have thought, from his perspective, it's a poor goal to give away. It doesn't give the defenders any chance to react. You know, it's literally parried out straight to Hayo, and he's pinged it back in before anyone can turn around and react, unfortunately.
Bit of a gut punch, that one, wasn't it, Joe? But
it was,
journey.
And like I say, I'm sure people saw the Sky coverage of McKenna sort of for the first time really losing his sort of calm presence when we've conceded a goal, as opposed to celebrating one where he sort of made friends with the side of the whole dugout there. But no, it was a real blow. But yet again, what happens? We concede a goal and we get going again and create a further, flurry of chance, really, don't they? Most of them in one hit where... But we just got back on top of the game, and there was only really one team winning it from that point. And I said the big chance was when Hutchinson, again, he'd sort of had a real quiet 10 minutes because he looked absolutely knackered. And when the ball was coming to him, he was just trying to get rid of it and didn't have it there, but it's almost like that goal just he sort of just sucked up to give it one last go and ran again at Jacob and just sort of went at him, sort of turning one way, then the other, then the other, then back the other, then sort of went past him. And on his right foot, it looked like he was really in, and he sort of tried to lift the ball over Allsop, who got made a good save. The ball sort of goes up in the air, and Sarmiento, could he have done better? Yeah, I'm sure he could have done, but it was a difficult chance. It seemed to take an age to drop, and he lets it drop and has a shot right-footed, and it's cleared off the line by, I think it's Greaves or Jones, who makes that clearance, and it goes back to Morsey, who has a chance. And you just think, this is our season summed up, the way we've won these games, all these late goals. Yeah. We've gone here 3-3. Are we going to get another one, a 4-3 win? It would have been so fitting for our season, but the shot's blocked, it's cleared. And then Taylor's fouled right on the very edge of the box, but Hutchinson's free kick from there was quite a poor effort, really. But no, it did just seem like if that would have dropped maybe to Kiefer Moore rather than Sarmiento, or Sarmiento had just thrown his body at it, just tried to bundle it home rather than try and let the ball drop. Like I said, there's 100 different decisions that could have been made. Mm-hmm. But he got a good effort in at goal and was unlucky. But no, it was credible. And I know we all were desperate for the win, but I think a 3-3 draw was probably a fair result. And as the final whistle went, the whole ground just sort of rose to their feet and clapped. It was just one of those nights, wasn't it, where it was just a spectacle of football for everybody there. And I think everyone appreciated that, even in the moment, even though the Hull fans were probably a bit disappointed that they didn't themselves get the win, because it could have put them really in the playoff conversation. We were obviously disappointed that we now didn't get that one step closer to promotion, but it was just one of those fantastic games. Two teams playing really, really bravely out from the back, and yeah, just a great spectacle.
Have you seen many better games than that, Craig, away from home in your, what is it, 30 plus years following the town?
Well, obviously the Liverpool FA Cup replay back in 1992. Brave loss in the face of adversity. No, but it was just the fact it got to a point, maybe about half an hour in, when both teams were just going at it, weren't they? They were just attacking. It was a basketball match. Loads of people around me were saying exactly the same thing. It was take it in turns to attack each other. You know, both teams' relative weaknesses probably are their defensive side. So both teams just went for it. And both, as I said earlier, both sets of fans were backing their teams. And as Joe said about the reaction from both teams' perspective, to be fair, whenever we went into the lead, it seemed to trigger Hull. Whenever Hull drew us back, it seemed to trigger us. And that just seemed to rebound off each other for that entire 90 plus minutes. And yeah, as Joe said about that, just that Sarmiento one, I don't think we can have a go, because you know, he has proven in the Southampton game that he can improvise in a split second if he needs to and
Leicester
score a goal at nothing. Yeah, exactly. He's the guy that you'd probably want to be in those positions. And it just did not quite fall quick enough for him, did it, to get his leg up horizontally to slam it in. It was just a great game. And it was, I say, appreciated by everyone that was there, I think.
Yeah. I'd be feeling a lot more rough today had that actually gone in, having stayed over in Hull. So I'll take the small blessing that we he didn't get that one. Let's take a look at the other results. Obviously, we're in the weird position where all of these happened before the game last night. Maybe I should have done this earlier on in the show. But yeah, you see that QPR 4 Leeds 0 feels like a long time ago now, that one. Blackburn drew against Tuesday night's opponents, Coventry. That's Coventry's hopes of the playoffs over as well. And Blackburn not quite out of danger yet. Bristol City 2, Rotherham 0. Middlesbrough have been decent the last few weeks, haven't they? 4-1 win at Cardiff. Huddersfield are down after only drawing with Birmingham, who need to win on the final day against Norwich. Bartosz Białkowski's last game, didn't even get a minute, unfortunately, in a 1-0 home win against Plymouth. Norwich drew to all with Swansea. Sheffield Wednesday, huge win for them against West Brom, and that kept Hull's hopes alive, didn't it? But yeah, it wasn't to be in Southampton. Wow, really, really off it at the moment. They need to find some momentum. I just feel like they need to get a nice draw or a win at some point before the end of the season, going into the playoffs. Watford have been in fairly good form recently. 1-0 win over Sunderland, and then, yeah, one of the best games I've ever seen at the bottom there. Hull 3, Ipswich 3, leaves the championship table looking not like that. That's the bottom half. We can talk about the bottom half first, actually. Talk us through the relegation picture here, Craig.
Yeah, well, as you said, Mikey, that Sheffield Wednesday result was just put the ball firmly in their court, you would think. You know, forgive me, I can't remember what everyone's matches are next week, but from memory, I think a lot of the teams at the bottom are playing a lot of the teams in and around the top near the playoffs sort of thing, aren't they? So, yeah, you've got to feel it's going to be a big weekend for Birmingham next weekend, you would have thought. I was listening to the radio on the drive up, and obviously we know about the takeover and the money they want to spend and the ground they want to build. Well, it's not going to look particularly appetizing in League One, you wouldn't have thought. So, yeah, it's been this way, hasn't it, for the last few weeks. It's just been an absolute bun fight there down the bottom. But you would have thought that Blackburn and Sheffield Wednesday might have just given themselves a little bit of wiggle room there.
Yeah, and let's talk about the top now, Joe. We're outside of that top two, but up there on 90 points, still in our hands, and more in our hands than maybe we were anticipating ahead of this match week.
It's simple, really, isn't it? As long as we get something at Coventry, then it'll be in our hands at Portman Road on Saturday. So if we win at Coventry, then we'll only need a point against Huddersfield. If we draw against Coventry, we only need a win against Huddersfield on the last day of the season, an already relegated Huddersfield this is. So it's just so vital we get something there, because if we don't, we're relying on Leeds dropping points against Southampton, which I don't think we can rely on that. I know Southampton have lost three on the spin, but they could easily lose four on the spin. So it is in our hands with 4 points in two games. And that feels a lot more achievable than the 5 points in two games is. So it's just so important we get to Coventry. Coventry, they played Blackburn yesterday. They were without a few key players. Since it seems their FA Cup semi-final, I think they've played like 5 games in 15 days, or this is their 5th game in 15 days. They are struggling big time at the moment, and we've got to make sure that we get into them from the very start. We don't allow them a chance to build into the game and to try and get confidence there. I think there's some positives that they play QPR at home on the Saturday. So this isn't their final home game of the season. Maybe that could play into our favour. But yeah, and Liam Kitching was sent off for them yesterday. So that's one player they'll be missing. Meant that they played with 10 men for half an hour yesterday, as sort of Nick just pointed out in the comments there. So we just need to make sure we get there and attack them and come away with something. However it's done, we just need to come away with something from there.
And I think that's another, sorry, Mike, I think that's another important aspect of yesterday's performance as opposed to the end result, was that it was a positive performance. It wasn't as if we got away with one yesterday and scraped a draw. We played well and fully deserved a draw, both from a player's perspective and from a crowd's perspective, from a fan's perspective, who are going to be going again on Tuesday night. You would hope that both the fans and the players are going into Tuesday on the back of a bit of a crest of positivity rather than, Christy, we got away with that one in the doldrums, if you know what I mean. Hopefully we're riding a bit of a crest of a wave in terms of the performance attacking aspect rather than it just on the back of a draw.
Yeah. Loads of reasons to feel enthusiastic. For those of you in the chat, if you've got a question, please put Q at the start and a question mark after. And after we hear from our sponsors and we do a few plugs, we'll get right into that. Innovation Labs, providing co-working and innovation hubs across East Anglia. We're the perfect place for remote workers, freelancers, startups or innovators to do business. Our unique member network creates extensive business development and collaboration opportunities. Hot desks are available from £20 a day or £99 per month, with business coaching also available from £50. Innovation Labs, turning your ideas into multi-million pound businesses. Located in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, with new sites in Thetford, Norwich and Kuala Lumpur opening soon.
Blue Monday are delighted to be partnered with TalkSport Fan Network and NordVPN, giving you the best possible offering for browsing the internet securely. NordVPN opens up global streaming options for content not available in your region by switching your virtual location quicker than Wes Burns running down the wing. NordVPN acts like your cyber Sam Morsey whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like passwords and credit card details from falling into the wrong hands. For about the price of an ITFC Match program a month or a Blue Monday Telegram subscription, you can get yourself a NordVPN account which can be used across 6 different devices. If you need to rapidly change direction like Amari Hutchinson, there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast or YouTube subscription to be taken straight there, supporting us here at Blue Monday in the process.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
That's Innovation Labs. Thank you very much for your continued support. And NordVPN, I know you voiced that advert superbly, didn't you, Craig? That promo is still active. The link is in the description in both the YouTube and the podcast feed. And check out Glory Days artwork for all your ITFC print, t-shirt and mug needs. Hopefully they'll be busy creating some more. That maybe they'll even release some more Ipswich Town ones this time in a week, Craig. Who knows? And yeah, the three of us, after we've done this show, are going to do a flagship extra, and that's going to be available on Monday. And if Tuesday's game is worth talking about, which hopefully it will be, we'll do a live reaction show on Wednesday night. There's not going to be a post-match reaction show because too many of us are up there in Coventry. And there'll be a Huddersfield pre-match live with Rich and Seb, the last one of the season, on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. And the Huddersfield flagship live next Sunday at 8 p.m. Could it possibly be the promotion special? If you want it to be a promotion special, just hit like on this video on YouTube and who knows, that might happen. But either way, it will definitely help our algorithms. Right, I'm going to try and battle my way into some of these questions here. We've got so many people here in the chat tonight, which is excellent to see. GB, he says he's not the most perceptive when it comes to analysis, but following the game at Portman Road, surely McKenna would have made Morsey aware he'd be again be marked touch tight when playing out from the back. I'll go to you, Craig.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine he pretty much knows that anyway. That everyone knows how we play, so he probably works on the assumption that there's going to be someone quite near him. And he did it. He did it okay, didn't he? And he does it okay 999 times out of 1,000. It's just that the one occasion out of those 1,000 was last night, and the previous occasion of those 1,000 was against Preston away. And as McKenna said in his post-match, that it does a lot more from us from a positive perspective than it does from a negative perspective if you weigh it out over the course of a season. And there were times last night where Morty was back to his normal self and then was jinking past people and driving away from people through the pitch, wasn't he? So I think it's just... on this occasion, I think it's fair play to the opposition guy because Morsey done what he always does. He glances over both shoulders and makes sure the coast is clear. But by the time between him doing that and receiving the ball, he's being tackled and closed down. So, yeah, maybe once bitten, twice shy. It won't be happening on Tuesday night.
Joe, Nick Bruce says, how many of us would have taken a point at 7:55 yesterday? Even disappointing to concede late, but a well-earned point. What was your sort of opinion going into that game? Was it a must not lose, or were you really hoping for a win there, or expecting a win?
I don't think I was expecting a win. Once I'd seen how the results had gone in a day, I was really hoping that Norwich and West Brom would get the results we needed, because I felt that sort of when we're driving up there and you'd read like Rossini's press conference and saying about how this is going to be a cup final for us, we've got to do this, we've got to do that, had after all that build up and all that going into the game, then all of a sudden that the game being worth nothing, that would have just put a massive pin in the atmosphere, and I think would have just played into our hands so well. But once that didn't happen, I think, like I say, we could have won it. Maybe we probably maybe should have won it from the positions we got ourselves into. But yeah, just everyone at every point this season would have taken 4 points from your last two games, wouldn't they, to get promoted. And we're now in this position and we've just now got to do it.
And especially against the teams that, especially against the teams that we're playing and in the positions and mindset that they also find themselves in, because as we know, we're playing two teams now that don't have anything to play for. So if you were to hand pick a couple of teams, then it might make a difference. I know Ben will argue the toss and say, oh, it makes zero difference whatsoever, but you know, you'd rather, I think personally, you'd rather be facing someone who's A, can't reach the playoffs, and B, already relegated, rather than someone who's scrapping for their lives to do one or the other.
If you look at the markets and how they move in regards to where the money's going on, they move towards the teams that have things to play for at this end of the season, and that big money that goes into the markets is not knows where it's going, put it that way.
It was on a draw for Colchester yesterday, for example, wasn't it, Joe?
I stupidly put Colchester in my accumulator yesterday. That is why I don't bet on football. Michael Brown, can Ipswich still win the championship? I guess that's dependent on how Leicester get on in their Monday night game. You know, a thing or two about hangovers, Joe. What are you expecting?
Well, I think Leicester only need 2 points for two games, don't they? Because they're four ahead of us at the moment. So if they get 2 points, then with their goal difference, we get past us. So I think it's quite unlikely they only get 1 point across two games.
Yeah. Nick Bruce asks, what will it take for Coventry away to be this season's Barnsley away? Well, we just have to sing all game like we did at Hull and just like we did at Barnsley last year. A couple of big moments from big players. How about another beauty from George Hurst, Craig?
Yeah, absolutely. And what was quite, well, what will make it similar to last year's Barnsley is a 3-0 away win, a comfortable 3-0 away win.
Good point, well made.
But what was good about last night, and I say, sorry to keep harking on about it for people who weren't there, but there was a feeling, certainly around me, that the crowd were willing the team. There was that element of the Blue Army chant from Barnsley that the crowd sort of noticed that we're under the cosh a bit here. The guys on the pitch need a bit of support sort of thing. So there, it was sort of back to how it was pre-Norwich, shall we say. It was nice to see. And you can only assume, as I said before, about there being positivity on the pitch and in the stands, you'd hope that it just carries on into Tuesday night, regardless of, you know, if should we happen to go behind, etc. I think everyone's on the same page here.
Joe, Neil Wilmore asks, will there be much rotation on Tuesday? And A says, should Chaplin start on Tuesday?
Personally, if I was picking a team and everyone was fit at the moment, I'd probably go Burns on the right, Hutchinson in the middle, and probably Nathan Broadhead on the left would be the three that I'd go to start with, because as much as Connor sets a tempo for us, he's an excellent, he's like the second captain on the pitch who sort of organises the front four. He's not been in great form lately, especially away from home. He hasn't really come up with the goods for a lot. I know he scored the goal against Blackburn, and which proved to be the winner, but he's scored very few. I think he's only scored like four goals this calendar year now, and he's not influenced games. But I think you watched him closely last night, and he was really, they really did their best to keep him out of the game, didn't they? So he's obviously helping free up space for others. But yeah, I don't see how you could not start Amari Hutchinson. And I think if Nathan Broadhead's fit and firing, you've got to get him in the team. So that's my answer on that one.
It's quite interesting where do you play Hutchinson though, because he's such a player coming in off that right. But as we said, you know, Burns is now back and fit, you'd hope, for another 60 minutes. And he's, you know, he's done the job in number 10. Has he now usurped Connor Chaplin as our starting number 10? You know, is he now the first name on the team sheet for the three behind the striker?
I think it did work with, again, yesterday with like Burns playing the first hour on that right hand side and just going at that fullback the whole time and keeping him wide and keeping him stretched, to then flip that over. And then all of a sudden he's got a totally different challenge to deal with, where sometimes when Hutchinson started on that right-hand side, he hasn't been able to have the same impact as the starting role, but either coming off the bench or moving across into that role, he does seem to really, really do well in that one.
Yeah, I suppose it's fitness. Having played 96 minutes last night, isn't it? It's whether he can go again for another 90 on Tuesday.
Hmm. We'll see. Hopefully we can just take him off after an hour, having the game wrapped up. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Colin Plum asks, are you like me loving seeing Kieran McKenna's passion yesterday? Yeah, he was pretty, he was getting into it a little bit with Liam Racine. There's obviously a lot of respect there, but yeah, he was a lot more animated on that touchline last night, wasn't he, Joe?
Yeah, and I think him and Racine, there's a huge respect from them, and they both tried to play football the same way. And you could see the sort of patterns of play both teams have been getting there. So it felt like a real chess match at times, because there was times where it's sort of moving around, and all of a sudden I think like Wes Burn slips, and then as soon as a player slips, it's like, right, he's out of position, and bang, 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 we try and strike and sort of take advantage of that. So it was a real, real intriguing battle from there. And so I haven't seen back his Sky thing. I've just sort of been pointed at it there, but I guess we're all feeling the pressure. And as I know, he's the most calm, measured guy, but he knows this is a massive, massive opportunity for him. And as calm as you want to keep, and as trying to do the right things, it's very, very difficult, isn't it, to keep those emotions in check. And I'm sure he's doing a better job than we are.
Almost certainly. Chris Rand, here's a change of pace, Craig. I think Chris has been really crunching the numbers recently, and I think he's looked for one or two distractions as well, which is nice. He says 6 goals against Huddersfield to equal the all-time championship home goals record held by Man City in 2001-2. Can we do an Exeter and get there?
Yes, especially if we're, what was it, against Exeter last year? 2-3, 4-0 up by half an hour, whatever it happened to be.
And it's on.
Let's just think that, well, yeah, if we happen to win, as we've all predicted, the mirror image of Barnsley away last year, that'll happen on Tuesday night. So if we're knocking 3 goals past Coventry on Tuesday, then there's no reason why we can't score 6 against Huddersfield next week. You talk about his number crunch. It's quite interesting that Chris has been putting stuff into the Telegram group. And forgive me, Chris, if I don't get the dates right, but he put a table up earlier in terms of home goals, both for the home team and against the home team, but just goals that happen at home matches, if you like. Since, and it might not be since 1992, forgive me, Chris, if I haven't got the dates right. But basically, Ipswich Town historically have got, was it 3 of the top 4 number of goals in home games over this period of time? Just in terms of, you know, value for money for season ticket holders, the amount of goals you're seeing in our home games is, we've got 3 of the top 4 years, if you like.
And I think in the top 15 we had another one, and all 3 of Joe Royal's years were in that group. So I'd forgotten how entertaining the entertainers were.
Yeah, it was brilliant days, weren't they? We really couldn't defend then. Reading Tractor, Humphrey's in for Leaf if he doesn't make it. Yeah, what's the consensus on Leaf Davis? Let's not speculate on whether he's going to play. But yeah, who would you be most comfortable seeing coming in at left back?
I'd go Clark, to be honest. I think you just need to stay with your tried and trusted at this point in time. And obviously what you then miss out on is the thrust going forward down the left.
Yeah.
And that may, as we were talking, Joe was talking about earlier, about if he had the choice and everyone's fit, that Broadhead would play on that left. Maybe if Davis isn't around, you put sprinkle a little more Stardust and stick Sarmiento there, just from a purely attacking perspective, because he's got Harry Clark behind him. I don't know. It's interesting to see what the ripple effect will be to the team if your first choice left back isn't there, your first choice creator and assister isn't there. But if it was just a straightforward choice as who would be your replacement left back, I'd go Harry Clark, because Karen Humphreys hasn't really been in and around the team or the squad, has he, the last however many weeks or months. So I think it would be a big decision to drop him straight into a crucial match.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in Flagship Extra. Andrew Pearson, Joe, do you think Ipswich looked more comfortable when we were drawing yesterday than when we were in the lead? We did. We definitely did, didn't we? Why do you think that might have been, Joe? Because surely there's more pressure on then.
Yeah.
When you're drawing.
Interesting, isn't it? But every time there was a goal, it seemed to sort of get us back playing. It allowed us, I think maybe just because Hull were so much more attacking when they were losing effectively that it was difficult to play against. But when you look at the game at when it went 3-2, we were the team that were having all the chances at that point, weren't they? Their keeper was making save after save at that stage when the game really, really got stretched. But no, we were excellent in that game state, and we struggled a little bit when we were in the lead.
Excellent. Another one on Leaf. Any concerns about Clark at left back? Sorry, we're sort of repeating ground a little bit. He says that he can be a little erratic defensively. Needless free kick given away. Humphreys would have been a huge call, though.
Yeah, I just think that in terms of the match situation yesterday, it was just a bit of a maelstrom to be thrown into, wasn't it, at that particular point in time. They Hull were flying, we were flying, you're being brought in cold to play left back. So I just think it's, it'll be Clark. It's got to be Clark. He's our, arguably our first choice right back and our second choice left back, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it's just the... obviously, you do lose something not having a left footer there, don't you? But it's a big step up for Humphreys. Obviously, sort of Brandon Williams was probably signed as a player that could cover both. But even if he was still here and still fit, it's still a totally different type of player there. So, yeah, there will be some adjustments made because of that. But you've got to go with the more experienced, the higher level player, effectively, don't you?
Michael Warner asked, with Sims in attack for Coventry, could you see Edmondson coming in for Wolfenden? Do you know if he's back? Is he back fit, Jay?
Played yesterday, I think.
Yeah, he was on the bench, wasn't he? I thought he was definitely there in the warm-up and seemed to be...
Edmondson, are we talking about, or Sims?
Edmondson.
Edmondson was on the bench yesterday, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There, but no, I don't see that you're going to make that change. I know we did the other week, but I think this is now the time where you just pick your best team and ride it out as best you can.
Okay. Colin Plum's absolutely convinced we will do this. Craig, are you?
Yes, I am convinced we will get something out of the next two games, as I say, because by virtue of the position that we find ourselves in, and I say again, the crowd find themselves in, the support, everyone just seems to be on a roll now as one, when you would have thought, we spoke a little bit about it before we went live today, that had maybe one of our competitors at the top of the league gone away to Hull and drawn 3-3, the crowd reaction from them towards their players may not have been quite so positive. I think you've just got to roll on with this positivity into Tuesday night, and just, as someone was saying in the chat just then, if we can play like we did yesterday on Tuesday, then there's no reason to expect that we can't get at least a draw out of that match.
Nick Maynard, who comes in for David?
Davis.
You
keep asking the same question, Mikey. We're going to keep giving you the same answer.
Here we go. BSE Blue. How can I relax during the day and sleep at night leading up to this game on Tuesday? Does anyone?
No, you can't. Just try not to get sacked for being unproductive for the next few days. If we get to the playoffs, we might all be in trouble with our employers.
Get some of those Homer Simpson glasses, the ones with the eyes on the front.
Yeah.
Just don't drool down out the side of your mouth while you're sleeping.
Wonderful. I think that's as good a place to finish as any. Ipswich Town still have promotion in their hands. All we need to do is pick up 2 points per game, something that we always talk about across our last two matches, and then we will be there. Joe, Craig, you're both going to be at Coventry. We're about to talk about it in the Flagship Extra. If you've enjoyed tonight's show, give us a thumbs up. I'm going to let Joe finish this one off.
If you're facing in the right direction, all you've got to do is keep on walking.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.